Welcome to the TNT EdTech Podcast. We know tech. We are your hosts.
I'm Scott, the teacher.
And I'm Matthew, the tech coach.
TNT EdTech Podcast, we're powered by Q.
TNT EdTech Podcast is proud to present the trilogy, the Lord of the Isti Rings podcast series. In this three-part series, we'll start on Tuesday, July 30th, talking with a consultant in the Fellowship of the Ring with Janelle McLaughlin. Then, 2 days later, part two, Thursday, August 1st, celebrating the release of so many new features to Flipgrid with The Two Towers, starring Anne Cosma and Adam Parker Goldberg. Then, the final installment, the third part, happens on Saturday, August 3rd, and this will be with the Tosa with the Mostas. This is the Return of the King with Michael Dresick. Each of the three parts in this series, The Lord of the Isti Rings, we interview individuals at the Isti conference that took place this summer. Let's start with the first part, The Fellowship of the Ring, with Janelle McLaughlin.
Hi, this is Janelle McLaughlin. I live in Indiana, but I work with educators all over the country. I love to focus on authentic teaching and learning strategies and environments, and I get to speak and write and consult in all different manners of education. You're listening to the TNT EdTech Podcast.
Welcome to the TNT EdTech Podcast. And I am your host, Scott Nunes, and
Matt Ketchum, the tech coach.
And who do we have with us today, Matthew? Janelle McLaughlin. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. And a heads up, Janelle and I met through Twitter, and we've been connected for a while now, and she's a listener of the show, so we're really pleased to have her. And she's just an amazing innovator. Follow her on Twitter, and we'll drop her handle in the show notes as well. And she's also a dynamic speaker and innovator and consultant. Yes. And what is your website?
My website's kind of long, but it's www.innovativeeducationsolutions.net.
.net. And how long have you been doing that? Since 2015, right?
I did. I started in June of 2015, so just completed my fourth full year.
And how did you get started with that? We watched your kind of intro video and your story, but, you know, can you take us a little bit deeper? What really, you know, impassioned you to do that and kind of go off on your own and be a risk taker?
Well, it's a bit of a longer story, but the short part of it is that I was a classroom teacher for 14 years, and I love teaching. Then I was moved into a district curriculum director position, and I was not sure if I was going to enjoy that at first, honestly. It sounded kind of boring. Sorry to other curriculum directors out there. What I discovered quickly, though, is that it was so much more than sitting at a desk and writing and researching curriculum. And so I was at a very small district, and I got to do a lot of the professional development. I would work one-on-one with principals, with classroom teachers, but I also led full school professional development and absolutely loved it. I think that just fed the teacher in me to be able to continue teaching. I did that for 3 years and just decided it was time to start something different. And when I was really reevaluating everything I loved most about being curriculum director, it kept coming back to that professional development piece. And it wasn't just the being in front of a whole school, it was the one-on-one opportunities that I loved as well. So I just started researching different consultants, and I would reach out to them on LinkedIn and say, like, hey, how did you get started? Are you happy that you did it? I didn't get a whole lot of feedback, actually, and then in that process, somebody found me by coincidence and reached out, and it's he owns a large consulting firm called Advanced Learning Partnerships, and he pretty much offered to subcontract a ton of work for me, which made it financially a little bit more feasible, less of a risk. It was still risky, but it felt less risky. to kind of go out on my own, knowing that I was going to have some work starting out. So that was 4 years ago, and I've only grown to love it more with each passing engagement, and it continues to feed that teacher in me, as well as just getting to share my passion for public education, for student-driven learning, for effective technology integration, leadership development. There's all different parts of the work that I do that challenge and enrich me throughout all of it.
Yeah, and how far do you go? Like, which kind of areas have you consulted for?
So I live in Indiana, and I do very little work in Indiana. I go anywhere that schools want to hire me. I've been in California, so I've been out your guys' way. And I've done stuff on the East Coast. I am in Texas a lot. I think they just have more funding for this type of work. They're large districts, which gives them a little bit more of a budget sometimes. So I'm in Texas a ton, Florida, Illinois. I even got to go do work with a school in Mexico a couple summers ago.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's cool. How was that experience?
That was super exciting. It was actually in a internationally known surfing town. So I would go work with the teachers from 9 to noon, and then I would find a different beach every afternoon. So it was rough.
Nice. So you surf?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I enjoy the beach.
Yes, I'm with you there. I have surfed, but I just don't go. I'm not the greatest surfer, and so I prefer to snorkel, and so I like snorkeling beaches.
I do love to snorkel, and that was not these beaches. They were some pretty rough waves, but they were fun. But I'm this Indiana Midwest girl that has a healthy fear of ocean, so no surfing.
And what kinds of future projects do you have coming up?
Well, I'm actually pretty excited. I was in Florida last week and worked with a brand new district to me. And they're a huge district. Most districts in Florida are quite large. And so doing any kind of rollout in a large district has its issues. So I got to spend a day working with their instructional technology team and just framing a vision and setting some goals and objectives for how they can set up a program that they have going. Basically, they're having 12 groups of Trailblazer teachers or pairs.
Wow.
So 24 teachers that will get to have very specialized coaching with their digital learning coordinators, is what they call their digital learning team people. And then they have 6 face-to-face whole group professional development workshops throughout the year. And then I'll get to go back and support both the coaches and the teachers through that. So that's fun. And I've got different projects like that starting all over the country. There's another initiative in Pflugerville, Texas, which is near Austin. I've been with that district for 3 years now, and we're getting ready to start a project-based learning initiative with a cohort of their teachers. So it's always fun when I get to see how the work has evolved in one district and how they have continued the transformation from what started as a technology integration project and has now evolved into project-based learning. And then in November, I get to speak at the Teach Better conference with my friend Jeff Kubiak. So that'll be fun.
Yes. And this is the first conference?
This is their inaugural conference.
Wow.
So they have been around for a while, and they're just doing their first conference.
And what are some other conferences you've spoken at before that people may know?
I have spoken at some regional ones. Like, there's one called TIA in Denton, Texas. There's one called the SC Midlands Conference in South Carolina. That one's actually quite large. There are a couple in Indiana called HEC, which is their EdTech conference, and also one in Indiana called ICE. They have 2 EdTech conferences.
Yeah, very familiar with ICE.
Yes, and so I've gotten to speak at both of those. There was a Google Summit in Montana, which was super fun a couple years ago. Met some great friends, actually, that I still hang out with today.
Isn't that the best? The SISTE has been amazing for connecting with friends, connecting with you. What do you look for when you go to conferences? Like, what are you hoping to take away?
So I think it depends on the conference, too. ISTE is, like, so enormous that one of my main reasons for coming is to connect with people.
Okay.
And I definitely learned through all of those interactions. Yes, I'm going to sessions and I'm hoping to learn something there as well, but the connections and the networking is just as important to me as the learning. I think smaller conferences, that's where I can really focus on just being an attendee and just going as a learner. You're going to naturally still connect with people, but it's on such a smaller level that most of the time when I'm at smaller conferences, I already know the people there and I've already met them. So I just go to get different things from different conferences. This one, I really had a focus on learning about new things that I'm not familiar with. So I went to a session on esports yesterday, which is this huge emerging thing right now in schools, and I need to know more about it. So I got to go to that one, and I went to one on the Henrico County Learner Profile, which is a super cool framework that a district in Virginia has developed. And I've actually used another progression that they created 10 years ago called the Teaching Innovation Progression Chart. And this learner profile is the next step in that evolution of
tools. That is neat. Can you go a little bit deeper into that? That's really interesting.
Sure. Their whole focus is to have kids be life ready. You know, we're not calling them 21st century skills anymore. And you can call it future ready, and that's good too. But really what we want is our kids to be life ready. And so this progression that they have developed is about communication, collaboration, creative thinking, critical thinking, how to be a global citizen. And then it breaks it down into what the learner does and what the facilitator or teacher does.
Okay.
And kind of takes you on a continuum from a more teacher-driven to a more student-driven environment.
Yeah, and all the studies show, right, we want to get to the point to where the students own their learning.
Yes.
And so we want to head in that direction. So whether it be John Hattie's research or somebody else's, it all pretty much points to the same thing. So that's so cool that they're doing that and tying that in with esports.
Yeah. Well, those were two separate sections.
Oh, two separate ones.
Yes.
Okay.
But that would be really cool if they did that.
I just envisioned putting it all together.
That would be awesome. I need to find out if Henrico has an esports program. But most of my work is all focused on student-driven learning. So any research and case studies and tools and strategies and resources that have been developed that I can take and use, I find a lot of value in. So this will definitely be one that I can directly apply to the work I do on a regular basis.
I think that'd be great if there were frameworks for the esports, because I think it is that more innovative idea, but I don't know how school districts, admins see the esports to bring into their schools.
So the session I went to yesterday, Dell hosted, because they have a newly emerging esports, what do you want to call it, section, department? I don't know what the correct terminology would be. So they had a panel with Juan. He is the ranked number one gamer in the world for Smash Brothers right now.
Okay.
He's like 27-ish years old. And then they had another gentleman, and he owns high-res Skillshot's like game developing company. And then they had a CTO from a district in Texas who has developed an esports program, and it sounds amazing. And then they had a gentleman who is the athletic director for New York Institute of Technology, and they've established an esports program. So it was really cool just to hear the value that school leaders are placing on the program. They said last year alone, colleges gave $15 million in scholarships to high school kids for esports.
Whoa. Yes. I didn't know it was that huge.
I know. I think it's just continuing to grow.
Yes.
And the year before, it was like $2.5 million. So that was a huge jump in 1 year's time. But they are focusing on how are we teaching students, healthy gaming.
Okay.
So they work in these whole training programs, and it was interesting just hear about you practice for 90 minutes and then you stand up and you stretch and you get on a treadmill for 10 minutes and you drink a bottle of water before you go back and you play more. And they've done research to show how it enhances your focus and makes your perspective a lot sharper. It was just really interesting.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. There were studies from ESPN, right, on the esports?
Yeah.
How it affects the body of the
esports
player.
And it was showing how it also excites the same areas of the brain that typical sports do. And it's focused on things like leadership, working together, and stamina, all these things that you would want from a sport. It just doesn't have necessarily the same physical elements, but all of the positive elements, you know, sportsmanship included, all those life skills you were talking about, getting them life ready, it has those elements. Like, hey, we're ethical, we're not cheating, we're playing by the rules, here are the rules, and then we're training purposefully. We're doing this purposeful practice to get better at this skill.
Well, one of the other things they pointed out too is it gives students a chance that aren't going to be like physical athletes, a chance to connect with a team, like you were saying. But the gentleman that was at the high school in Texas was saying he had students who had never cared about their grades before, and now they had motivation. And so there was one boy in particular he shared about, came in, he had gotten a 63% on a test, and he said, hey, I've already got some extra practice set up with the teacher, and she's letting me take a retest. And he'd already had this learning plan established all on his own because he wanted to not get kicked off the team. He wanted to be able to continue to participate.
That's amazing. I wish more students did that. And I think a lot of it comes from us modeling it from them and showing them how to do that. And yes, we do that in sports, but you know, physical sports kind of leave some out of that. And so, hey, this is a great way to get more folks engaged on top of clubs and other civic organizations that might be around that target different types of learners and students. I think this is just one more area, and definitely a growing area. That's huge, those stats. I saw a stat from last year at a presentation from earlier this year. Esports brought in something like $25 million, you know, for students, like in terms of, or maybe not just students, but in terms of like the pros getting paid. And that was through all of the different gaming opportunities that they have, because there's so many different ones. You had mentioned Smash Brothers. Did they talk about any other games?
They only talked about Smash Brothers and Melee, because those are the two games that Juan, the gamer on the panel, focuses on. He said basically you find your game and you practice at that one or two. You, like, apparently those competitive gamers don't really do a lot outside of their expertise areas, I guess. Also, Juan does work for those two companies at this point. I mean, he didn't, but he also said he met a 12-year-old 7 years ago who was doing things that no 12-year-old should have already been able to do. And the kid's like, oh, thanks, I just picked up this game last year.
Wow.
And he's now, like, also one of the best in the world.
Wow.
Same kid.
That's amazing when, you know, you just start out with so much natural talent. It just, you know, gets you that head start, but the hard work is what you really need to continue and persist and have that, like, lifelong career.
Yes, absolutely.
I had a question. We're here at ISTE, this technology conference, and there's teachers, admin coming here, seeing, you know, teaching strategies, frameworks, but also a lot of ed tech tools. What kind of advice do you have for admin or teachers coming here for the first time? What do they take back? What do they do? They're seeing so much.
That is hard, because it's like drinking from a fire hose, right?
Yes.
So I think what I tell people before they come, I mentioned the district in Illinois I'm working with, and their new director of digital learning is here. She's never been to ISTE before.
Okay.
She doesn't have anybody else from her district here, so she's like processing it on her own. And what I told her beforehand is give yourself breaks throughout the day so that you do
important.
Have time. Yes.
That's very wise. I don't think anybody's told me that, but so important.
Yeah.
You need those brain breaks. So intense.
Well, and we're all learners, or else we wouldn't be here. And so I think we set these schedules. I mean, I looked at my schedule yesterday. I had four different sessions at the exact same time that I wanted to go to. So obviously I can't do that. But I think we have this, like, I've just got to be busy. It's that bell-to-bell mentality
all
that
right.
we have.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
But that's what I learned after my first ISTE. I had to take breaks and either go sit by myself and kind of process, or find somebody to talk to, whether it's about what I just learned or just life, to get that brain break. So I think those are important. I personally need to, as soon as I get home from any conference, I need to go back through notes and kind of organize my thoughts.
Yeah.
Same here. I have to use it before I lose it, so to speak.
Absolutely. Pick out the main parts that I'm going to be able to apply immediately, pick out parts that I want to share with other people. When I was a classroom teacher, it's obvious I'm going to share it with my students or with fellow teachers. Uh-huh. As an administrator, you can do the same thing on sharing it with fellow administrators or your staff that you're working with. Now as a consultant, I have to be a little more strategic because I may not be seeing the people I want to share it with for a month. So I need to make some notes on who I want to share what with. I do blogging too, so that's always been a place for the last, 8 years where I just naturally reflect.
Okay.
And I think those pieces are important, whether you're reflecting verbally with somebody, whether you're writing things down for yourself, sharing them on a podcast with friends.
That's, I think we're going to do a recap of everything we learned.
Yeah, there's so much. And like you talked about, the breaks in the schedule, I haven't allotted a lot for breaks to process, post session yet. I guess I kind of have when I'm walking from one place to another and having conversations, but I haven't compiled all that information and been intentional with it yet. And, right away when I get home, that's something that I need to do, and maybe even today as we finish up the conference, that's something I'm going to be doing, and just having some kind of downtime, like, mm-hmm. Hey, just explore a little bit. I'm going to go to the expo hall and just walk around and not have any set plans, and just kind of go wherever I'm led.
Awesome. I've heard in the expo hall, I haven't been there yet, but there's like a sensory overload area where they have the sound headphones?
The noise canceling
headphones. And they have these kind of pods that you can go in where you can kind of close your eyes.
Oh, that takes the light away.
Just to get, because there's so much sensory overload, just so much, like you're saying, taking in and processing it, and just a time to just check out for a little bit. And I think that's neat that they have that digital wellness space here at the conference. I'm looking forward to checking it out today.
Yeah, I know last year we explored a lot of creative space solutions and setups, and that just reminds me of one. I remember after our sessions last year, I started looking at those IKEA pods, kind of what you're describing. Uh-huh. That seems so cool, especially with more research going into SEL and things like that. Do you do any work with that, like social emotional learning?
Yes. The beauty of my work is I get to adapt to whatever the school district's needs are. So that is really nice. And actually, that's one of the things that we're talking about at the Teach Better Conference is
That's Jeff's gig right there.
And we're focusing it through elementary literacy. So how to incorporate SEL into a regular literacy program. So
we
that'll
need
be
that
really fun.
Kind of from the ground up, like the sooner the better.
For sure. And we know that that's not happening at home very much anymore. And so that's another responsibility that falls on teachers, not just that digital wellness piece, but also like the self-awareness and regulations and how to just be able to take over that for students. We want them to own their learning. We also need them to own their mental health, but they don't have the strategies if we're not giving them to them.
One area that I know we started looking at more with these ed tech tools is the data student privacy element. So there's some really cool tools out there, but they don't always have it laid out with how they're protecting student data. Is that something that you're seeing a little bit more districts being aware of it, or?
Definitely, and actually that was the district I was with in Florida last week. They are a Microsoft district because they are fearful of security. I think, and just like versus Google, I think Google is also extremely secure, so I'm not sure that that's super valid.
Yes.
But in other areas, they have concerns for different tools, and I won't mention names, but they're worried about different platforms that allow for video, and they want to be able to pull all of those at a district level to be able to see those interactions if they ever needed to.
Yes.
And not all of them have the capabilities for district administrators to do that, so that's one of their major concerns. I don't think most are as worried about emails or those type of security issues. I think what I'm seeing them more as being worried about web-based programs that they don't have much control over.
Okay.
At a district level.
All that info goes to that vendor, that service.
Yes.
Yeah, that's huge. And then they're not sure how that's being used necessarily. Mm-hmm. It may not be malicious, but hey, who knows? I mean, with the AI capabilities that we're developing too, and data mining and things like that, hey, there's a lot you can do with data. Data's pretty powerful stuff.
Sure. And I'm never going to fault a district for caring about their student safety. So I think you just explore and educate yourselves as much as possible. But if they're going to err on one side, it needs to be on the security of their students.
What do you see in the next 5 years as the next teaching strategy that you'll see start to be used at our school sites?
I think that we're going to continue to see an increase in SEL awareness and just being like really mindful of incorporating that into regular curriculum. I think we're also going to see a lot more focus on learning space design. That's just becoming more and more spotlighted and is so super important, I think, in teaching and learning in general.
Okay.
It's kind of like that hidden pillar almost, and until we bring it to light, we're going to continue to see classrooms that are way too cluttered, and and I was at fault. I was the elementary teacher that covered every space because I thought that's what I needed to do. That was a while ago, so I'm going to cut myself some slack for not having current research then. But and then I think we're going to continue to see more equity as far as digital resources go.
Yes.
So that can't happen soon enough, but we also need to make sure we're incorporating that professional development piece, or else the technology is just another thing instead of something that can actually engage and help students be more effective and efficient.
Oh, I think you're spot on, and that last piece you said about, you know, the PD with teachers, that's why I'm out here. You know, I'm on my own dime. I know it's hard to put, you know, certain teachers out there, all the teachers, it's tough. So Matthew was able to go, you know, through our district, but I was not. But you know what? It's so important that I'm able to connect and learn and kind of be at the forefront here at ISTE. I mean, really, this is kind of like the quintessential conference for just a whole conglomerate of ideas, whether it be SEL, digital learning, esports. I mean, I can go on and on. The topics are endless. There's probably 10 sessions that I would want to go to for many of these time slots. And it seems like at sometimes, like, you know, there's 25 or so, like, big, heavy-hitting items going at the same time. There's just so much content. Like, you talked about the fire hose. It definitely can be that. How did you decide to filter your choices?
That was hard because there's just so many to go through. So first, I always check speakers that I know I want to hear.
Yes.
Okay.
So I kind of filter through the presenter first. And then I go also through, I like how ISTE will give you recommendations based on what your interests are.
Yeah.
And so I do a lot of coaching in the work that I do. So I definitely looked at their coaches. I do a lot of work with leadership. So I looked at their leadership strand. So then I just started looking through those two recommendation strands, I guess, that they already created, and just started reading and seeing. I definitely tried to seek out things I don't know as much about right now. I don't need to go hear something that I already know. And there's way too many other choices. So so then I just filtered through that. I'm also on my own dime, obviously, you know, being self-employed, and that's hard. But I also want to invest in my learning.
Yes.
But I volunteer. I don't know if you know about that, Scott, but volunteers get their registration paid for.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
So it sounds like, hey.
So I've been fortunate the last 2 years to get to do that.
Okay, that's a pro tip right there.
That is a pro tip. You got it. You have to apply.
Okay.
I don't know, a few months ago, you know, but so 8 hours of my time since I've been here have been spent volunteering. So I also had to filter around sessions around those volunteering.
That's
chunks.
Doable though, especially if you come in a little early.
Yes. Yeah.
That's doable.
Last year I was able to get one of my blocks done on a Saturday, which was really nice. This year I had a wedding, so I didn't get here till Sunday.
Okay.
But I did do 4 hours on Sunday and 4 hours on Monday, so it is nice to get it done. I prefer to get it done early in the week, so then I can just pack my last 2 days with sessions.
Yeah, that's really great. We've really appreciated you being on the show. Not only in terms of your professional accolades, but as a listener, I think you may be like one of the first like listeners that we didn't know beforehand to be on the show. Fun. So we're having a TNT EdTech podcast first today, yay, folks.
I like being the first in things.
Yeah. So if you had any parting wisdom for our listeners, what would it be in terms of what you've picked up from ISTE, maybe even combined with what you already know?
Well, I'm a people person, and I'm about building relationships, and so I can't say enough about taking time to just collaborate with other educators that are passionate about teaching and learning. I don't even think they have to be passionate about the same areas in education. Just those conversations can be some of the best learning experiences, and they don't have to be at ISTE. They can be across the hall in your building, or they can be through Twitter. LinkedIn's one of my favorite social media platforms that I think doesn't get enough airtime in the education world, okay, but that's another
place. We've been
place.
Hearing that
Yeah, that's like a hidden
lot.
Treasure, I think, in this
That's the third time at this conference I've heard that from somebody.
I actually like it better than Twitter for really getting to know people.
Wow.
Just personally, I think it depends on everybody's efforts, right? I could probably put forth that much effort in Twitter and get to know people better there as well. But LinkedIn has been the space that I've really connected more authentically with people. So I just think it goes back to the connections part. Find good people and talk to them.
Nice.
Where
I know.
Can our listeners find you?
Find
at,
you,
on the,
yeah.
On Twitter.
On Twitter. And give us your LinkedIn, too.
LinkedIn, awesome. So you can just find Janelle McLaughlin on LinkedIn. Twitter, I am Ms_Mac4. So you can find me on Twitter there. My website, again, is innovativeeducationsolutions.net. Facebook, Instagram, you know, I'm everywhere that people need to be these days. Connect everywhere. I love to connect.
Awesome.
And that's Janelle McLaughlin, folks. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to follow and stay tuned for more EdTech goodness.
Yeah, thank you, Janelle.
Thanks, guys.
Stay tuned for future episodes in this three-part series. So the next episodes will be released 2 days after each other. So coming up next will be The Two Towers with Ann Cosma and Adam Parker Goldberg. And then the third part will be The Return of the King with Michael Dresick.